Hello and welcome everyone to this very special edition of Fueling the Round with me, Jason Plato, and my co-pilot and navigator, the one and only Mr. Dave Vitti.
Hello!
Fueling the Round is powered by Adrian Flux. As the UK's largest specialist insurance broker, Adrian Flux will tailor a quote to your exact needs and help you save your money on your car, your bike, or even your home insurance. Dave, how are you?
I'm very good, thank you. It's a little bit nippy, isn't it? Because we're outside here at the Pit Stop Cafe at Silverstone for this special episode, but I'm excited because we have some all-star guests about to join us.
So, ladies and gentlemen, please welcome to this special live direct from Silverstone, special edition of Fueling Round, live from the Pit Stop Cafe at Silverstone. We've got the one and only, we call him Mr. Side Parting, Dan Rowbottom. And we've got two others. We're going to leave the best till last. We've obviously got Mr. Paul O'Neill. And the absolutely delicious grid walkabout beauty fountain of knowledge that is Louise Goodman.
Welcome, welcome, welcome. Thank you very much. This is exciting to have us all here together in front of this live audience. I think I should start with you, Daniel. In terms of today and in terms of racing generally, and this is a question that is often asked of touring car drivers, what's it like racing with someone who's probably older than your dad?
He's not quiet, but he's not far off, is he?
I tell you what, he's seriously not far off, is he?
He was my favourite player in Toka 2. That's how old he is.
Do you not find, though, but when you're racing, and this is a serious question, when you're racing and when you look in your mirror, does the sight of that grey hair not just, like any motorist, does it not kind of disturb you?
It's just like Jesus coming through the river, you know? It's a special sight.
Jesus coming through the river. I mean, you've had worse reviews, haven't you?
Yeah, I've had much worse reviews than that, to be honest.
Louise, lovely yes. Louise Goodman, thank you so much for joining us. How do you, and you must be asked this a lot of times, how do you keep them all in check? Because it always feels to me like being a school teacher, you have to keep all of these little boys in check and look after them because they do mess around, do they not?
Did you see those slightly scared looks that I got from Dan and Paul then? Jason's too old, he doesn't care. Nobody keeps Jason in check. But I think you summed it up. School teacher.
Yeah.
I'm tall and I'm bossy.
Yeah.
And I can do scary face really easily, can't I, Paul?
Yep.
Do you find that, do things carry over from the track beyond that? So, for example, obviously with racing, there's always going to be situations. And can you leave it when you get back into the pits, or does a bit of needle always carry on? And you've all been there. Lou, you must see it all the time. Paul, you've been there. I mean, is that true? Can you get rid of it?
I don't know. I've carried grudges and I don't even race anymore. I just don't speak about them on the telly. It's a difficult one. No, it really is, isn't it? You know, as drivers, you're going hard at it, and you don't want to give an inch because you know that it's going to be a bad thing for you. But you know what? Life's too short, and that's probably why I stopped racing, actually, because I just hate conflict.
I think it depends on the drivers. It's down to a character thing, isn't it?
Yeah.
In fact, some drivers, it's part. Well, let's face it. You and Matt, you know, it was part of the story from a journalistic perspective. That was part of the story, and it was. But you need heroes and you need villains when you're building up a championship. But it's just about keeping the rivalry in check. But when you've got different types of personalities, some people let it wash over them, and some people, in life, never let anything go and carry a grudge with them, don't they? So.
Yeah, and the amusing thing was, going back to talk about me and Matt, we'd be hauled into the bus and being torn strips off. Said, look, can you just calm it down, you two? And then we come out, and Louise and the press were going, great, can we have some more
peace? Yes.
So there's that conflict. We did play up to it a little bit, I think, but by and large, it was genuine. It's competition. It's serious.
In many ways, it was the best thing that could have happened, wasn't it? Because as you say, that kind of rivalry and conflict and intrigue, and it gets people watching, and it publicises a sport, and it brings, bums on seats and eyeballs on the telly.
I think people forget as well, I had people coming up to me saying that Jason and Matt Neal thing, that is so staged. And I went, I can tell you a few things about that situation that is definitely not staged.
Absolutely.
Staged?
Yeah. Wow. People thought it was staged. Like I said, I've been round Jason's house and this has happened, and I've been round Matt's house and that's happened. So I know it's not staged. Yeah. And actually, I've never told you this.
What happened round his house then? Was he up to no good?
Yeah, we had like a proper, like, we had an effigy of you and burnt it. Oh, no, joking, we did. No, you didn't give me a toe at Silverstone or something, so I just joined his ranks. No, but there was a funny one, and Louise will know about this, because we were at Rockingham 2011. I was in the your championship-winning Chevrolet Cruze, and I'd had not a great year at all. And Jason had really helped me out at Rockingham, and we ended up, I was on pole, I think, with 3 minutes to go. You had a massive falling out with Matt.
Yeah.
And the you were firing into the Civic. The Civic was firing.
It was a £5,000 falling out, that was.
Massive.
Yeah, it's a lot. That was a fine.
There was a lot going on, and I remember I was driving my car, and they were on the radio going, Jason's pipped you, but you're P2, you're on the front row. I was like, oh, amazing. Mm. And they said the TV will come and do an interview with you. Just come into the box. As I was coming into the box, I was like, this is it. You know, the sponsors, they want this coverage. And then all of a sudden, I just seen them all running off and you trying to fire into that lanky streak of piss.
No, it's me dad. It's me dad. It was the control your man, Barry. Or something like that.
What's he doing, Barry? It's amazing. It's my new favourite, Tim. I never liked you, to be fair, JP, but your dad's sound.
Dan, growing up and obviously watching the sport, who were your heroes or heroines, obviously, other than Louise Goodman?
Well, Louise is, she's been the apple of my eye for a very, very many years now. Do you know what? I grew up watching the very late end of the Super Touring era. I think the whole, you know, you can't really pick a favourite era because it's all so different, you know, like our current era is really close, and this year's even. It's tough now, isn't it? Just because there's so small gaps. But then you look back through the years, and there were some great names, wasn't there? Like Clelland, JP, Menu, him. I have to be polite, you know.
Him, this one.
I don't think Matt. Obviously, Matt. You know, Matt did the thing with the Independence win, which was amazing. Yeah. You know, and it's just, I think, just so many great memories of touring car, and I think it's so emotive for so many people. Because, you know, you used to be able to buy a Cavalier and you saw one on the TV on a Sunday, didn't you? You know, pretty similar. So, you know, it's evolved into, it's probably the realest working man's motorsport that we have, I think.
And to pick up what Lou said, I think one of the other reasons why it's so popular is the access.
Yeah.
You know, what are the sports, you know, which is as big as this, where you can go and speak to the players.
Yeah.
You know, the moments before they go and do their thing and actually moments after they do the thing. You can't do that in F1, you can't do that in GTs, you know. That's I think one of the reasons why this works.
I think the word's relatable, isn't it? You know, and I think that's applicable with a lot of sport these days, is that, you know, you can't relate to the people involved. Certainly in the things like football, you know, you can't relate to those people. And I think you're right in the same way. And the nice thing is, because it does come over as being very relaxed and quite a family environment, and you know all the characters, is that you do feel like, you know, they're not that far removed from yourselves. I mean, for me personally, the reason I've always liked touring cars is because they look like cars, at the risk of saying something stupid. Formula One has never really done it for me, but I've always liked touring cars because you've got that proper competition, they do look like proper cars, and it feels like proper racing to me.
Well, that's what I was going to say. It's proper racing as well, because Formula One is the pinnacle of the sport. It's an engineering-driven sport, whereas touring cars, it's about entertainment. Yeah. So I'll be sitting in my little office in one of the garages tomorrow. I'm regularly jumping up and down and shouting at the television because it's exciting. And I know people who you know, have got turned on to touring cars recently. They'll come up to me, people I know in Formula One, and say, oh, my God, I watched some it's really exciting, isn't it? Because you kind of live for those exciting races in Formula One, and we get, you know, three a race weekend, or at least two a race weekend.
But I think it says a lot when the ITV main channel pick it up for us, because it's not a situation where they've been force-fed it.
Yeah.
ITV main channel have said, oh, we'll take that. And then after one round, they've gone, we'll take another few as well. So it just shows you where it's going. It's a proper sport, and you can see by people turning up just to listen to
I've
us.
I've just read on my little notes here, 10 years since you were in a car.
Nearly 10,
is that right?
This is my 10th year of
not being in it.
Of ITV, which is crazy. And, like, literally for me, doing what I do now, you know, I've got to thank people like Louise who helped me through, because, you know, I was just brought in as a stopgap because there was so much time to fill between the races. And, you know, and Louise and Steve... and Tim,
in the 10 years or whatever since you've been racing, Paul, what have you noticed like these days? What's the main difference now as opposed to when you were last driving in terms of the sport? What's changed?
It looks harder. I'm being dead honest. I think it was very nice.
In what way? Why?
It just looks a lot more competitive. When I did it, it was more spread out. I was always with good teams. Not often did I have a bad car. I don't think there's that many bad cars out there now. I just think it's that close that the championship, for me as an onlooker, can be swayed by other means. So I'm not saying it's corrupt, but I'm saying it can be, you know, made into a spectacle amazingly, by the balance of performance, we'd call it now. So it is...
Nicely played. I like it.
You know, I still love it. I'm a fan. Do I miss it? A lot of people ask me that. Don't miss it at all.
Do you not? Not at all?
No, not
is
at all.
Right? Is that right?
Do you know why I don't miss it? Stress. Because I'll speak with... And I hope Dan doesn't mind me saying this.
No.
I speak to people like Dan, and I see... And I hear how difficult it is to get a race weekend put together. And I know, JP, you've been in it a long time, and you gentlemen, particularly, are very good businessmen and racing drivers. Tom Ingram is another one for me who's an amazing businessman and that. I just don't have the fight and the days in the week for it to become a 24/7 thing for me. I love turning up. I love working with Lou. I love being a broadcaster. I get excited in commentary because I know what it's like for the young kids, especially in the genetic juniors, to race a car and not think about anything else. And that's what I love. And I don't miss the racing. I mean, I don't mind club racing, but at this level, no thank you.
So when you say that, are you talking about the graft in terms of the responsibility that each driver has got to get their next deal, to get their backing? Is this what you're talking about?
Yeah. I was only just thinking. I was in the back of the ITV truck before, just talking to a few of my colleagues, and I was thinking how is it autonomous?
Autonomous.
Yeah, no. When the leaves are falling on the ground.
Oh, that's autonomous.
That's that one. Not when your car drives yourself. I was only thinking.
Autumnal. Yeah,
that's it.
Autumnal.
I was only thinking it's when I need to wear a jacket outside that I used to have massive anxiety about the next deal.
Is that right?
That
was a trigger point.
And it was always here.
Winter jacket.
Second or third. Round of from the end of the year, I'd put my jacket on and I'm like, am I going to be racing next year? Where am I going to get that £200,000 from? Am I good enough to do it? Am I good enough to get sponsors? And that's why I jumped and I wasn't pushed, and ITV found a gap for me to do something. It was the best thing I ever did, but I have zero regrets. I've won two touring car races. They were two of the best days of my whole life, and I never take anything back from that.
Interesting.
Well, the picture of the first one is an amazing picture, isn't it?
It's very good. Cool.
Well, the video, in fact.
Yeah, I'm dead fortunate.
Kissing the floor, crying, all that sort of stuff.
Yeah. But no, you can imagine at a home round, you'd never thought you'd win a race. You'd never thought you'd race a car. You never thought you'd race against Jason Plato. Mm. These people, it was a dream come true. And as much as I joke about things, I've had a very privileged life, mate.
Louise, we were talking before about, obviously, you being the school headmistress and looking after all the naughty boys. Obviously, having Jade Edwards in the mix, that must be refreshing for you to obviously, you know, have a female driver in the championship. And I suppose, how do we encourage more women into the sport, would you suggest?
Oh, don't. She's a disaster. Jesus Christ. I'm joking. I love Jade. That was a joke.
Look at that
poorly
nervous
time.
Look on his face.
That was a joke.
God, Jesus. I'm in trouble.
I think
trouble.
He's a brave man to have a pop-up at her. Because, you know, we all know Jade.
Yeah.
She's got a great right hook on her.
Yeah,
she's
going
to land right at the end of
you're worried your about me. Phew, you wouldn't want to take on Jade, would you?
I wouldn't want to mud wrestle with Jade.
I'd be right behind her.
I'd lose.
To answer your question, Dave, by getting more young girls in... Because it's like a pyramid, isn't it? If you think of all the young boys who start karting and how many get to the top, you just got to get more 7-8-year-old girls.
It's a numbers game, isn't it?
It's just a numbers game. That's all it is. It's all it is. Because it's not overly physical. Mm. So it's not like, you know, the difference between a male golfer and a female golfer, or a male boxer and a female. It's not that at all. It's mostly in your head.
Mm.
So there is no reason why girls can't do it, other than it's just the numbers.
People don't, as I said, people don't think of like taking young girls. They think, oh, she'll want to go shopping, won't she? Well, you know, maybe more of them will. I don't know, but I think there are lots that don't.
I think that's changing. I think, do you know what? I think Jade Edwards, from personal, and she's a good friend of mine, Jade will leave a massive imprint with what she's doing at the minute in touring cars. What she did at Thruxton was absolutely stunning. Absolutely stunning. Whether you're a boy or a girl, the way she drove was amazing. But she will leave a massive imprint. footprint for females in motorsport, in my opinion, in this championship for sure.
Need to see it to be it, don't you?
That's exactly, yeah.
Well, you know, you need role models, don't you? If you're a young woman and you're looking and you don't see anybody like you in there, you know, it's very difficult to sort of imagine yourself in that world. But then you see Jay and you kind of go, well, you know, if she can do it, then why can't I do it? Or why can't my daughter do it?
And to be honest, you know, having Jay, or me being part of Jade's team, if you like, because I'm the new boy in the team, you know, we obviously, you know, everybody looks at each other's data. There is nothing between
pretty
us,
good
really. You know, there's a bit of obviously, Jade's lacking experience, but in terms of her ability to do the job in the car in specific corners, there's nothing there. No. I mean, there's no difference between all of us. But when you add it up and a bit of experience and knowing the tyres and all that sort of stuff, then there is. But her ability, it's not lacking at all.
No,
it isn't.
Absolutely. There are certain questions that we always do on Fueling Around that some of you may have heard, obviously, who've heard the episodes before. Jason, I think we should run through some of these with our all-star panel.
So, car history. First car, and give us a story of your
cars.
Stalls.
I had a Ford Fiesta Z-Tech S diesel, because I'm sensible. Barrel rolled that after 6 weeks. replaced it with... So I then went back to Ford and I'm like, oh, I've got gap insurance, which is mega, because they actually give me more than the paper car, perfect. So I ordered a Fiesta ST because it was quicker. Petrol made a better noise. But it didn't get delivered for 6 months. So do you remember Citroën ZX's?
I do, yes.
Tremendous vehicle.
Yeah.
I had one of those for a period of 6 months.
Was that a GT? AX GT was
no,
a machine.
No, it was a naturally aspirated diesel.
What about your car history then, Lou? Come on, you must have had some crackers over the years.
No, not really. Well, no, my first one that I bought, I drove my mum's when, you know.
What was that?
It was the lovely little orange Golf.
The Love.
Yep.
Ah, not a Beetle, sorry.
Then I got a Ford Fiesta.
Wow. What trim?
Do you know what? It had lovely go faster stripes down the side, and that was about the only fast bit about it. It broke down within about a week of having it. And then I just used to use one of my favourite cars, actually, one of my first jobs. I didn't have a car, but there was like a work car that was a little mini that they used to buzz around in London to the different jobs. But of course, they all had their own car, so I used to nick it at weekends. That was really good fun.
And when you were at Jordan, you must have had some sexy cars. Yeah.
You're joking. Eddie Jordan spent money on a company car for somebody. You are joking. EJ had this great thing about... for starters, we were sponsored by Unipart, so he used to get free cars off Unipart. Well, he got free cars off anybody who could get free cars off, let's face it. But we got the ones that Unipart gave us. And Eddie would come up with lines like, electric, you don't want... electric windows. You don't want electric windows. They break down the whole time. You want the windy ones.
The windy.
Oh, he was just anything to avoid giving you, you know, to actually having to stick his hand in his pocket. To be fair, Tony Jardine wasn't much better because he was my boss before that. I had this gorgeous, what was it? It was a Fiat Punto, but it was a real, you know, go faster. I was away at a race. I came back and one of my colleagues, he was driving and he'd had a really lovely car. And he's driving a Honda Civic. I was like, oh, mate, what happened? He went, oh, yeah, well, I didn't tell you. Tony's done a deal with Derek Warwick because Derek Warwick Honda was one of our clients. Yeah, he's got rid of my car. I've got a Honda Civic. And I went, you must be gutted. He said, not so much as you're going to be. Yours is red. I was like, what? What? I hate red cars. And you've got rid of my Fiat Punto and given me this. You are joking.
Can you imagine that? Thinking it's bad to go from a Fiat into a Honda.
I know,
that's
mate.
Pretty bad.
But back in the days, eh?
I was going to say, it's like your career, boys, and them Hondas, isn't it? Can I just say, I had some cool cars.
I was going to say, you've had some belters, eh?
Yeah, so I had that Fiesta when I first passed my test, but then I had a Citroen Saxo VTS with a Shogun bonnet vent that I put in myself.
Nice.
Then I had to get a new bonnet because that wrecked it. And then I got a Subaru Impreza 22B, which I had it for 6 weeks, nearly had the crash of my life and sold it for $5,000 more. And then I had an Escort Cosworth and I sold that for $2,000 more.
A proper whale tail?
Yep, whale tail, mate, yeah. Blue smoking, everything. Right, snotter.
Did you manage to hang on to that in witness?
I know, mate, I know. Fortunately, by then, I'd climbed up the social ladder via Mel C, and we had a driveway.
Ah, okay.
Gated, electric, the lot.
Absolutely. There's no, that would have lasted about 10 minutes on the streets of Widnes.
Absolutely no chance around there, mate. We just drive around in Escort Popular Pluses.
What's the biggest motoring mistake while we're with you then, Mr. O'Neill?
Motoring
I know it's a kind
mistake.
Of broad question, but what's your biggest motoring mistake?
Having an ABS fault with my Fiesta on the, and I needed to go to work the next day in Warrington, and I took my sister's car without her knowing and crashed it into a lamppost. It was a Mercedes SLK.
Absolutely.
And then Ron Dennis rang my house, my mum and dad's house, because it was because they launched the what you call it cars, the F1 car in 96 or 7, mm-hmm. and they all got a Spice Girls all got a car each, all SLKs in different colours. Yeah. And yeah, he rang the house and was like, "Tell me what happened," because that's cost us a few quid.
No way, that.
Yeah, yeah. Wow. So that was nice. And then yeah, and some people I work with at McLaren now, one of the main tech guys there, his name's Zag, Italian lad. He found out that my sister was Mel. And he come up to me on a job about 2 years into a McLaren job and was like, "I never thought it was you, but you caused us a lot of grief. And that car was in at McLaren for ages and we had to do this and that." So that was a massive mistake. Front of the Daily Mirror, front of the Daily Star.
Oh, nice.
Big red.
Proper
yeah.
job.
So love the fact I've like tried as hard as I can in my career to make a name for myself. And the only thing I've got is like a smashed up Merc on the front of the mirror.
It's all right.
Jason, we're very nearly out of time, scarily, but there is one question that we do ask to everybody, and I think it'll be interesting to get this from our three all-star panellists here, and it's about the fact that we always say that music and cars go very well together, we think. So we need your fantasy drive, please, from each of you. Where are you? Where are you going? What are you listening to? And most importantly, what are you driving? Mr. Paul O'Neill, you first.
Oh, wow. Okay, I think I'll go with McLaren 600 LT.
Okay.
I launched that a while back. Lovely car. Yeah. Really love it. Exhaust, glow in the dark and yeah. stuff. I'd be going to, and I love this drive every time it comes up, Knockhill.
Okay. Would you?
Yeah, I would. And obviously I'd take it around the track
yeah,
as well.
No.
I'd be listening to Underworld by Born Slippy because it always reminds me of Scotland and yeah. train spotting. So yeah. that would be me.
Very nice. I like it. Lou, paint us an automotive picture of perfection, please.
I'm in Italy.
Okay.
I'm doing the road from Faenza that goes up over the hills and then down into Florence. Absolutely stunning. I'm driving. Oh, what am I driving?
Red Civic. Red Civic.
It's not even red. It's not red. The car, actually, I always really lusted after is a Gordon Keeble.
Okay.
So I'm driving a Gordon Keeble. Jason's going, what
the hell is a Gordon Keeble?
What's that? Do you know Gordon Keeble?
Sounds like a euphemism.
No. It's a car. It's a really cool car. It's a British car. It's a post-war British little sports car. It was so over-engineered that they couldn't make any money out of it. Honestly, Google it. Google it. They only made about 99 of them back in the late 50s, 60s, and about 97 of them are still on the road.
Is that right?
It's a really cool little car.
Dan
yeah.
Robottom
yeah.
drove one.
And I'm probably listening to the Rolling Stones.
Okay.
Yeah.
Very
just
good.
Just fuck me, I was going to say the Rolling Stones.
Oh, so well, we can, you know.
We can do it together.
All right?
I would love, for me, cars peaked early, mid-2000s. Big V12 NA Ferrari Enzo for me. That's my hero car.
Mm-hmm.
Or an F40, I suppose. You could do it, but we'll commit with an Enzo. Where would I drive it? Probably Highway 1 in California would be quite cool. And sort of start down in San Diego and end up in Monterey and do a lap of Laguna Seca to finish it off whilst also listening to the Rolling Stones. You like that, don't you?
Lovely.
I thought about that.
Very, very yeah. nice.
It's a better than lap of Knockhill. You'd have to deal with Gordon as well when you get there, wouldn't you?
I wasn't That's thinking depressing. About Gordon, I was thinking about Gillian.
The faces of the rest of us when you said Knockhill and we all went, what?
Are you
I
sure?
Like place.
I love yeah, Knockhill, but yeah, I just think of that drive to Knockhill as being...
That's because
like,
you're a southerner?
It's a oh, that's true. It's a bloody long way from where we live.
Before we all fall out, I think, Jason, you need to wrap us up with this special episode of Fueling Around. Do you want to take us out?
Well, firstly, big thanks to our special guest, the one and only Mr. Paul O'Neill. Round of applause, please. Dan Robottom, Side Parting Weekly. And the delicious Louise Goodman. Well, that's it for this very special edition of Fueling Around, powered by Adrian Flux. As the UK's largest specialist insurance broker, Adrian Flux will tailor a coach to your exact needs, help you save money on your car, your bike, or even your home insurance. Dave, as always, thank you. But a huge thanks to our special guests, Paul, Louise, and Dan.
Absolutely lovely to have you here. Don't forget, you can get in touch with us on Twitter at Jason Plato or at David Vitti. And if you've liked what you've heard, feel free to give us a 5-star rating, press the follow button and share the podcast on all your socials. Once again, please show your appreciation for our guest today, Mr. Paul O'Neill, Louise Goodman and Daniel Rowbottom. Thank you so much for joining us for this special live episode of Fueling Around.
So thanks for coming, guys and girls. Thanks a lot.